The conversation
convince these large media corporations
begins here.
That their obligation is to fairness and common sense rather than the political objectives of one party.
On 55 KRC.
And 55 KRC, the talk station. It's Monday. Be happy about it. Or you can be miserable. That's your choice.
Chicken crap.
Oh, there's John Boehner. But he's whining like a, well, I can't say that out loud on the radio because of FCC compliance. Anyhow, got a little bit about John Boehner. I don't know why I thought he was retired. He's gone off to his wine drinking, you know, retirement and weed running. Maybe he's been smoking too much of his own product of late. He suggests that the Republican Party's been taken over by kooks and crazies, among other things. John Boehner. Of course, Ted Cruz and John Boehner going after each other. We should put him in a cage, like a cage match. Ted Cruz, John Boehner, fight to the death. A slap fight? Or are you referring to a specific type of slap, Joe? See, I can't say that on the radio either. The FCC wouldn't like it, and some would perceive that as being sexist. I'm not getting into that. I'm going to stay out of it. You call it whatever kind of slap fight you want. Anyhow, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. If you don't know what we're talking about, then that's good. Just move on. Anyhow, you may have something on your mind, something you encountered over the weekend. Speaking of weekend, I hope you had a really nice one, and I hope you were able to cut your grass. Anyway, coming up to the 55 KRC Morning Show, 7:05, my dad, Jerry Thomas, back with the Monday Morning Spleen event. Really looking forward to that. And wow, Josh Mandel. I love Josh Mandel. It's a great guy. Man crush kind of love. And this is not a real, you know, profound, deep, desirous love. Just Josh Mandel, such a great guy. Apparently, the Republicans didn't like him. There was some convention Axios or whatever was putting on. I got the details later. But I guess he wasn't invited. And so he went down to this particular meeting of Republicans and sort of hung out anyway and then was told to leave. Josh is a great guy. We'll talk about being escorted out of that event. Happened in Florida. Did he ever have any interactions with John Boehner? Is that one of his subjects, or is that Joe Strecker? That's Joe Strecker's. He wants to know that. Quite often, our guests will say, yeah, I'd like to talk about these subject matters. You can talk about whatever you want, but it's like when I have a conversation with Judge Andrew Napolitano. He has a case or some specific set of events he'd like to talk about, usually the subject of his weekly column or something. So, you know, you get somebody like Josh on the program. He said, hey, I really want to talk about being kicked out of this event in Florida, and you put it down on the list. Sometimes it's either me or the executive producer, Joe Strecker, who has a topic in mind. And today he just wants to know if Josh ever interacted with John Boehner. And they're talking about packing the court. They're talking about making D.C. a state. If all of this is from the Democrats, and engaging in a massive amount of overreach in an effort to secure their permanent dominance and leadership in Washington, D.C. I'm sure you've read about this. Getting rid of the filibuster is also a subject of discussion. And there was an interesting journal article or op-ed piece from the 8th. Kim Strassel, you've probably read what she's written, The Best Tonic for Restoring the GOP, Overreaching Democrats. And it was really good observations, and I don't have to dive into all the whys and wherefores, but the parallel I was drawing, it's like gun sales. What has happened, you know, through the Obama presidency, and of course now with Joe Biden president, you didn't see it as much during Trump's presidency, but the minute the left starts going after your firearms ownership or talks out loud about taking certain types of guns away from you or whatever else they want to do, what happens? Gun sales go through the roof. When you have violence and insurrection that goes unchecked, gun sales go through the roof. And which is the party of taking guns away? Well, the vast majority, it's Democrats. We can all agree on that. I think statistically it bears it out. It's a party platform for them. It's not for the Republicans. So that is a form of overreach. Even people who never before owned a firearm went out and bought one over the past 5-6 years for a whole host of reasons. Maybe there are some liberals out there that went and bought firearms. They thought the Trump loonies were all going to come after him. Evil orange man and his army will come for me. Well, fine. If you bought one for that, then you bought it for the right reason. You are concerned about protecting yourself against violence and insurrection brought about by literally anyone. Many people bought firearms for the first time. They thought they were going to be taking it away. What do your kids want to do? The minute you say something is off limits, forbidden, can't do it, it's the first thing kids want to do, isn't it? Ooh, I wonder what that's all about. So you got that concept. And then you think about the GOP, what's working for them? Why are their collection numbers up? Actually, the money-making, the Republican Party's doing really, really well bringing in the bucks. How is that possible? The Republican Party's dead. It's fractured. It's irreparable. You read that all the time, I know. But the more the left bullies itself into positions, the more they dominate, the more they seem unreasonable. And they are quite unreasonable insofar as their positions are concerned. The less they care about runaway deficits and spending, the more they care about illegal immigrants. And we can have a conversation on that. If you're offended by the term illegal, I'm definitionally correct. Thank you very much. The more we care about the illegal immigrants that have entered our country unlawfully and handing them benefits. There's a story about New York taking part of its $2.1 billion or whatever and handing it over to people who aren't even residents. Our own population hasn't been addressed specifically, and here they are. Coming into the country unregulated, the border's broken, Kamala Harris hasn't said a word on it in 19 days. What's with that? It rubs the regular person the wrong way. It forces everyone to step back, even Harry Reid saying, you better be careful. You better watch out on this court packing conversation. Harry Reid has stepped back from his own party's runaway liberalism. You got to watch out for this kind of thing. There will be a backlash. Biden's out there urging people to talk proudly about raising taxes on the rich. What he fails to say, you know, when you're raising taxes on corporation, the backlash is, well, profound. The number of jobs available reduces. And, of course, the price of goods and services goes up. We, little people out here, the unwashed masses, pay those increased taxes. That rubs people the wrong way. The Green New Deal and the amount it's going to take out of the economy, the struggle over how many jobs it's going to create or not, you know, you can go a little too far. I think a lot of people are aware that our emissions overall in the United States have dropped precipitously. And that really, you know, we're in line with anything that stupid France Accord would do. Doesn't matter. So don't give up hope. The Democrats are doing it to themselves. Now, does the Republican Party have problems? Absolutely. Read what Boehner had to say. I mean, I know Boehner's out growing weed for a living now, and that's fine. He's allowed to do that. Well, except under federal law, right, Joe? I mean, you know, federal law, I guess they could come and prosecute John Boehner for engaging in a criminal enterprise. Wouldn't that be kind of funny? I mean, if the feds just woke up one day and decided, oh, that's right, marijuana is still a scheduled drug. You know, we could go out and enforce federal laws and bust these people and kick the doors in at grow facilities. Huh. Let's go after Boehner's company. Well, the liberals are in control. This is how they could get revenge on John Boehner, right? just the thought. Anyway, it has been 5 years since Boehner retired as Speaker of the House. I know it seems like maybe just yesterday to many. Puts the responsibility of the January 6th, what they're calling insurrection. Speaking with Scott Wortman of the Cincinnati Inquirer, insurrection on Capitol Hill, he blames President Donald Trump, saying that Donald Trump is responsible for, quote, that bloody insurrection, close quote. Trump incited that bloody insurrection for nothing more than selfish reasons, perpetuated by the expletive he'd been shoveling. We all can presume we know what that expletive might be since he was shoveling it. Anyway. Perpetuated by the expletive he'd been shoveling since he lost a fair election the previous November. Trump's refusal to accept the result of the election not only cost Republicans the Senate, but led to mob violence. It's amazing. I didn't realize people were so free of free will and incapable of personally making decisions that they hung around and waited for Donald Trump to make them for them. Again, I'll go back to the words Donald Trump used, none of which ever said, show up here and engage in an insurrection. Somebody interpreted that, I guess, by reading in between the lines. Ted Cruz had a few things to say in retort to John Boehner, who went off on a tear against Ted Cruz. Yeah, he really did. Not, I don't know that necessarily fairly. I mean, John Boehner's entitled to his own opinion. But he referred to quite a few people in Washington, D.C. as loons and crazies. You may have voted for one of those folks that John Boehner believes to be a lunatic or crazy. He even had the audacity to say, Boehner did, he doesn't even think Ronald Reagan could get elected today. He thinks Ronald Reagan wouldn't recognize the Republican Party. And on one note, with Boehner, I will agree. Yeah, insofar as spending is concerned, you're right. Ronald Reagan cared about our deficit. And I remember as a young person in my early political awakening years in high school, remembering Ronald Reagan concerned about the runaway deficit, and it was in the billions of dollars back then. If I recall correctly, we hadn't reached a trillion yet. We're at 30 now. Roger, hang on if you'd like. I will take your call right out of the gate when you get back. But I want to mention Bond Furniture and Design. Because, well, it's Bond Furniture and Design for more than 80 years, hanging out in beautiful downtown Loveland. That's where you'll find the showroom. It's a beautiful showroom. Got lots of really cool things to choose from. And, of course, in terms of choosing, if you can't find something that is perfect for you, have it made for you. That's right, Bespoke Furniture. They've got a couple of different lines where you can actually create the look.
Jeez, what a little crybaby. You gonna cry all day, crybaby?
Little crybaby.
Let me guess, Joe, words for John Boehner, maybe? Huh? Maybe? A little bit? I cannot say that on radio, Joe. They won't let me. That's why I need a podcast. Well, I got 4 hours of the podcast every day. I'm just not allowed to use FCC non-compliant language. That would be the only difference. I'd be talking on a podcast, and I could just drop all. I could say exactly what I want is on my mind. Oh, yeah, that's right. You'd get a bigger salary, right? Because they'll pay you extra, and they would promote the program, right? Like, what is that other one that you love so much? The one they promote all the time. Everything else. Yeah, let's go to the phones because Roger was kind enough to hold over the break. Roger, happy Monday. Thanks for holding, sir, and welcome to the program.
Good morning, Mr. Brian. Happy Monday.
Thanks, sir.
Long-time listener, first-time caller.
Well, thanks for listening. I truly appreciate it, and you can call anytime you want. At least I hope so. I don't know what you're going to say yet, Roger. If you go off on some weird tangent, you might think Joe put up Roger and then in parentheticals so the crazy one, but we're going to give you the benefit of the doubt because we haven't heard what you're going to say yet, Roger.
No, it's a good thing. Something happened 40 years ago today at 7 o'clock or so in the morning.
What was that?
The first launch of the Space Shuttle Columbia.
Are you kidding me? It's been 40 years?
40 years today.
Oh, gee, thanks, Roger. You just made me feel ancient. Seems like the other day. Wow. 40 years. That is amazing. You just called to pass along the fun fact.
That was it.
And to make me feel really, really old. Thank you, Roger. Good man. Hey, thanks for listening, too. I appreciate
it. Thank you so much. You have
a wonderful week. Wow. Wow. I'm going to take him at his word. I didn't see that, you know, posted on Fun Facts in History today, but... Anyhow, real quick here, and not necessarily quick because this is a topic we could probably talk about for the entire program. There was one article which was closely related to something I definitely wanted to bring out, and it's so rude, and it's so illustrative of the arrogance of so many people in the teachers' union. Woo, teachers' union? Yeah. There was a California high school teacher that was caught on camera. I don't know, caught because this is all being broadcast on Zoom because the kids aren't in school. So you learn about what teachers are and how they act because you can sit there with your child's shoulder and watch them. Or your child could record the whole thing and then play it back for you, which is kind of what happened here. Berating students, this teacher was, because their parents were pushing to end remote learning. San Marcos High School teacher Alyssa Piro raises her voice at several, apparently, seniors during a virtual lesson. She teaches English. She is referencing an ongoing lawsuit launched by a coalition of parents against Governor Newsom, as well as some high school districts seeking eased COVID restrictions and an accelerated return to physical classrooms. Local unions say that doing that would be constitute judicial overreach. So in this video, this was which was recorded. If your parents want to talk to me about their profession and their opinion on their profession, I would love to hear that. However, if your parents want to come to talk to me about how I'm not doing a good enough job on distance learning because on what you need as an individual, just dare them to come at me. Because I am so sick to my stomach of parents trying to tell educators how to do their job. In another video, she can be heard aggressively yelling at a student inquiring about white student union. You don't need a white student union, Jake. You get everything. Anyway, focusing more on the Zoom and the people being concerned, there is so much new information coming out here about how terrible this has been for our children. And there's a new report by a nonprofit called Great Public Schools Now. And they did this study in Los Angeles. Editorial board of the Wall Street Journal looked into it and provided a summary, basically, of what has happened to our children, at least within this one particular school district. Throughout the fall 2020 semester, this report notes that elementary school students in L.A. received fewer than 2 hours a day of synchronous instruction on average. That's group instruction. And that's over the Internet. Less than half as much as other school districts they looked at, Long Beach and San Diego school districts. L.A. district considers, get a load of these low standards they've placed on this. Remember, this is for virtual learning. L.A. district considers students engaged merely if they log on to the online teaching platform. And apparently, by even this low standard, the Great Public Schools Now report finds that over 13,000 middle and high school students were consistently disengaged this past fall, and an additional 56,000 students did not actively participate on a daily basis. And the months of January and February this year, 22,800 students missed 3 or more days of class a week. This is one school district. During the 2021 school years, 37% of Los Angeles kindergartens exhibited basic literary skill. 37% basic, that's compared to 57% the prior calendar year. I would say that is a precipitous drop in basic literacy skills. Geez, 57%, that's a failing grade right there, and that's a hell of a lot better than last year. Fall 2020 assessment showed that only 1 in 3 middle and high school students displayed grade level reading and math skills. 1 out of 3. These are the future. This is the future of our country. Ignorant, illiterate children. Oh, and for those concerned about minorities, yeah, you might expect here, learning loss is especially acute among poor and minority students. Port raises alarms about a surge in the percentage of students receiving D's and F's this past fall, with students of color and students from low-income houses experiencing the highest number of failing grades. Uh-huh. Don't be talking to the teachers. No, no, no. Don't complain about Zoom classes. No, no. There's nothing to see here. Everything's fine. Oh, here, the CDC study. Virtual school can be damaging to mental health, a completely separate study confirming everything that you and I have been able to observe ourselves interacting with our children during these crazy times. 527 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station, Cullen Electric, wonderful electricians. +531 749 5500 800-823-TALK. #550 on AT&T phone. Care to call? I'd love to hear from you. Let's go to the local stories after I take Tom's call this morning. Hey, Tom, welcome to the program.
Morning, Brian. Hey, I know Joe's got a lot to do, and by the way, you got a great producer there. He does a fantastic job. But
thank you.
Would really be funny is if somebody was able to put some drops during Nancy Grace's update there, like the Archer one, or whatever. The guy with the handguns in the car and the 10-year-old with the AK. That's just that's parental supervision at its finest, right?
You got that right, Tom. right.
The reason I call is, you know, I look back, what, 35, 40 years ago when I was in school. Geez, I'm old. The two of the biggest things for kids in school is social time with other kids. They gotta have something. We homeschooled our children, and we found ways to make sure they got to interact with other kids. Your brothers and sisters just don't cut it.
Right.
You know, you gotta have interaction, and it teaches you skills that you need. You throw them in there with other kids, and they have to figure out how to deal with other kids. That is an absolutely necessary thing that they need. And the other thing is accountability. You gotta be in a setting where there's accountability for your child. They've got to be able to do their work and do it on time and do it right. Except for math now. We don't have to do math right now, apparently. But I think those are necessary skills, and those are the things that they're missing out on. And, of course, the left doesn't care because they want our children to be dumb and dependent and unaccountable.
I was waiting for that, Tom. I was waiting for that. Appreciate you putting an exclamation point on it, my friend. Stay well. 749-5500-800-823-TALK. Josh Mandel's coming up later in the program. And, yes, U.S. Senate candidate Josh Mandel escorted out of a Republican gathering in Florida. We will talk about this in addition to finding out whether he had any interactions with John Boehner back in the day. Happened at a donor retreat hosted by Republican National Committee in Palm Beach. Josh Mandel escorted off while one of his primary opponents, Jane Timken, was permitted to stay. This according to Axios. Timken and Mandel among those running for, of course, Senator Rob Portman's vacated seat. Axios had this to say. The invitation-only event is taking place at Four Seasons Resort at the RNC Reserve, and the RNC reserved the entire hotel. While Timken, former Ohio GOP chair, was invited to the event because she is a major donor, that's in quotes, Mandel was not, so he was asked to leave. Despite not having his name on the list, Mandel seized on the opportunity to get some FaceTime with top Republican donors while they were all in one place. But when the first event formally kicked off at the hotel on Friday night, Mandel and others who did not have credentials were told to leave. And I wonder if that really says anything. Jane Timken's clearly connected. It does say that, doesn't it? Does that speak well of anyone who might be interested in draining the swamp? Seems to me there may be a connection in there somewhere. 535, 55 KRC, the talk station, 7. It is 540 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Hope you're having a happy Monday. Give it some time. Hang out here all morning if you like. My dad's coming up at 7:05 doing a spleen vent. We get to hear from Josh Mandel about being booted out of the Republican vent in Florida, among other things. Brian James, he's going to be talking about, well, he's our financial guy. He'll be on at 8:05 to do Money Monday, talking about the Dow and the S&P hitting records again, housing market blowing up, and maybe a little bit about the jobs market, too. It isn't on the list, but I'd like to ask him about that because there are apparently tons of jobs available out there. But approximately half of the available workforce that's out there doesn't want to work because of COVID. They don't want to work. It's, oh my God, COVID's out there. I'm not working. So there's that to deal with. We empower you to talk about with Bob McEwen, trade policy and, third party money. KRC Cares with my good friends at OHC, the cancer specialist. Today we'll be talking with Dr. Mark Berkey. He's a radiation oncologist with OHC about head and neck cancer. Not often uplifting, but very informative, of course, information about what you should look for, and, of course, all the positive we get every time we talk to OHC about the treatments that are available and the new breakthrough treatments. Again, I'm thoroughly convinced we'll get a home run cure for cancer here at some point in my life. At least pray for that anyway. Over to the Stack of Stupid, we have alleged hit-and-run crash happened in Boca Raton, Florida, Friday morning. sadly resulted in the death of a federal judge and left a 6-year-old boy seriously injured. Police later located the suspect after she crashed her vehicle in Delray Beach and passed out. 23-year-old woman identified as Nastasha Andriani Snape from North Lauderdale identified herself. Little red flag here. She identified herself to authorities as Harry Potter after regaining consciousness.
Idiots doing idiot things because they're idiots.
A separate report by a different news agency down in West Palm Beach said Snape was found to be convulsing or having a seizure and that unspecified drugs were found inside the vehicle. She continued acting erratically and after being transferred to the hospital. Judge identified as Sandra Borenstein, the woman who died, the judge. 75 years old, she worked at a New York City area, succumbed to her injuries after being transported to the hospital. Snape's vehicle, seen traveling erratically along the oceanfront, witnesses told police, vehicle struck Feuerstein and the boy, who was identified as Anthony Ovchinnikov. Little history about the judge herself. Snape arrested, charged with leaving the scene of an accident involving death and leaving the scene of a crash with injury. No word on operating a vehicle while under the influence of, well, apparently narcotics. Anyhow. Let's see here. I'm going to struggle with this one. I was just talking to Joe about this. But whatever. This is the Stack of Stupid. And I am, you know me, I'm a libertarian. Whatever you like to do behind closed doors, as long as I don't have to view it or hear about it, knock yourself out. Whatever. It's your life. If whatever you do complies with and meets your doctrinal, dogmatic principles and ideas, as long as you're doing it with a consenting person, whatever. What you do in the comfort and convenience of your own home behind closed doors, whatever. We have a married mother of two. And to whom does she reveal? Anyway, I'll just read you the first sentence. A married mom of two has revealed that she rakes in a whopping $4,200 by selling videos of herself. Brace yourself. Selling videos. This means there is a consumer demand, however small it happens to be. Selling videos of herself. Passing gas on the internet.
Dude, what the hell?
The 48-year-old former travel agent who uses the pseudonym Emma Martin, in case you're interested in finding her website, has been, quote, flatulence camming, close quote, since 1999 and now charges $4.99 a month for people to view her, well, emitting flatulence. What in the hell kind of world did I wake up in?
I have no idea what's going on.
Tally, I'm with you. This is a 3-page, 8.5 by 11 sheet article. I just got through the first paragraph and a half, and I have seen and read enough. 5:45.
As is tradition.
Is that one of those if you build it, they will come kind of realizations, Joe? I mean, anyway.
Crazy.
It is 5:50 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Monday to you. It's Money Monday in the 8 o'clock hour. Got a lot going on in the 8 o'clock hour, but... of course, Monday morning, Spleen Vent Monday, in the 7 o'clock hour, followed by one of my favorite politicians, and there are not many, Josh Mandel. Not currently, anyway, but he will hopefully take Rob Portman's seat. Anyhow, let's go over to the Stack of Stupid. CNN has, it's woke. But they were mocked for being so woke. They have decided that certain text fonts communicating Asianness can be racist. Communicating Asianness. the trait of being Asian. Get that bubbling bong of stupidity out and pack it full of your powerful hydroponic chronic, because this is apparently what they're hitting on over at CNN. Quote, CNN is political satirist Tim Young talking with Fox News. Fox News, CNN has reached the epitome of we're out of stuff to pretend to be outraged by this week for clicks if they're surmising which fonts are racist. Agreed. Of course, you know what a font is, type of character that you use. You select the type of style you want it to print out in. They suggest it can perpetuate problematic stereotypes. Wow. Who's the racist? If you're looking at fonts and you're seeing racism in there, aren't you the one that is overly in tune to what is and is not of a particular culture? I have never in my life, well, I suppose if it's Asian character writing, as in Asian symbols, unlike using Arabic symbols in writing that we use, then clearly it is Asian. Their network's verified Twitter account wrote, for years the West has relied on so-called chop suey fonts to communicate Asianness in food packaging, posters, and ad campaigns, but such fonts perpetuate problematic stereotypes. The satirist was sort of out loud questioning, this piece leaves me with more questions than virtual signals. Which fonts belong to which demographics? Does this mean Times New Roman is Caucasian font? Is the old typewriter font for elderly people? Are there straight and gay fonts or fonts based on the 54 genders? I need to know. I'm so confused at this point. Well, welcome to the world. Wow. The report, quote, karate, wonton, chow fun. The end of chop suey fonts, close quote, urges readers to close their eyes and imagine the font if they'd used to depict the word Chinese. I'm going to go with sans serif, just plain old 12-point. That'd be okay with me. It's legible. Welcome to the world. Everything is steeped in somebody's perception that it's racist or demeaning to somebody else. And I guarantee you, Joe, the person who wrote that article and determined that font the font thing is a reflection of some sort of racism, white guy. Guarantee you. With a what? With a hipster beard? Oh, maybe a man bun, too. White guy. Going to stay away from that one for reasons I discussed with Joe off the air. I don't think I have enough time for that one anyway, Joe. Okay, let's go with this one. It's a stabbing. Michigan City stabbing. Police say a man stabbed a woman multiple times early on Monday and then was injured himself when others came to the aid of the woman. All right, what happened? 3:30 in the morning, 1,000 block of East Michigan Boulevard. Police showed up. They found two people with significant injuries. Preliminary investigation reveals a 55-year-old Michigan City woman was outside a home in the area when the 67-year-old local man approached her. They engaged in a brief conversation. And then he stabbed her. According to police, a group of people in the area came to the victim's aid after witnessing what the man did. After which, I guess it was mob action, the man suffered severe head injuries. That's called instant karma. Don't mess with the neighbors. Police ask anyone who witnessed the attack or has information to contact this particular corporal. Imagine the witnesses saw the neighbors who were there probably saw nothing except the man stabbing them. 555, 55 KRC, the talk station, 749-5500, 800-823, talk, pound 550 on your AT&T phone. John Boehner having a hissy fit and more tragedy as a consequence of our children being at home. Got a whole lot more to talk about, plus the spleen vent coming up. I hope you can stick around here all morning.
Words matter.
We all saw it coming.
We are all responsible.
All of us. Tell the truth.
Keep it here.
We must work together.
On 55 KRC, the talk station.
606 at 55 KRC, the talk station. Happy Monday to you. My name is Brian Thomas. Appreciate you tuning in to the 55 KRC Morning Show, or sometime later today, listening to it on podcast, 55KRC.com, anytime you can't listen live. Great conversations last week with Gavi Bogtrup for mayor, also Raffel Prophet, two of the mayoral candidates in 1 week. We heard some vice mayors, Christopher Smitherman, on a variety of topics, and, of course, every week talking with Dave Hatter on Fridays, Tech Friday with Dave Hatter, Judge Anna Napolitano on Wednesdays. So don't forget the podcast, 55krc.com. Phone number here if you'd like to comment about something going on in the world, 749-5500, 800-823-TALKER. Hit #550 on AT&T phones. You get right to Joe Strecker, my executive producer, who is responsible for lining the show up, and I can't thank him enough for that. Today, my dad in 1 hour with the spleen vent. Josh Mandel at 740 about being booted out of the Republican National Committee's Florida party. Because he didn't have the right credentials. Josh Mandel has the right credentials, from my perspective, to take over Rob Portman's seat, and we'll see what happens. Jane Timken got invited to that event. She was allowed to stay. We'll be answering Joe Strecker's questions on whether Josh Mandel ever had any involvement with John Boehner, who is having, of late, a hissy fit over the other day. In fact, referred to the GOP as a bunch of kooks and crazies. Not a huge fan of Donald Trump or anybody connected with Donald Trump. Boehner used the term crazy, nutty, Looneyville, and crazy town when describing Congress while he was Speaker between 2011 and 2015. I seem to recall him having a problem with the Freedom Caucus as well. Boehner described the Republican Party's metamorphosis during... during Donald Trump's rise to, become president of the United States of America. See, this, John Boehner's angry or upset about Donald Trump, who, John, got the nomination and was popularly elected. Got 75 million votes on the reelection effort. Didn't win, but in spite of 4 years of nonstop beating on him like a pinata or a baby harp seal, he survived, managed to do pretty gosh darn well, and he inspired a whole bunch of folks. Now, again, I'm no huge Trump fan, but I'm not going to say he's crazy, Looneyville, crazy town, or anything else for that matter. He called Fox News founder Roger Ailes paranoid. Wow. Anyhow, John Boehner making it in the news of late. Rook, I didn't mention the last time I was talking about COVID and other issues, but I thought this was rather interesting. You know, last time I checked, Joe Biden, big union guy. And, of course, he was advocating for the unionization of, Amazon. Didn't go real well in Alabama for union organizers. You know, only 16% of the Amazon facility that was voting for union membership, only 16% of the facility's total workforce voted to join the retail, wholesale, and department store union. That was the one that was pushing for unionization. Rejected it completely. I laughed because the union did say it was going to appeal the vote. I don't know on what basis, but sided against unionization. The employees expressing concerns that, it wouldn't provide them with more job security, perhaps less. They were concerned that their pay and benefits would not increase by union representation since they were already making double the federal national minimum wage. Last year, Amazon did quite well. Their revenue last year jumped 38% to $386 billion. Their profit nearly doubled, and they added 500,000 people to the global workforce. So, everything's going along swimmingly at Amazon, and they are passing along this to their employees in the form of a higher minimum wage. 15 is the minimum for Amazon. That's double the state wage in Alabama, which is $7.25, parenthetically, the federal minimum wage as well. Workers were concerned also about the cost of union dues. What are you going to do for me in return for taking a chunk of my paycheck? I'm already making fat bank. I've got job security. They seem to like us here. They're not going to leave town if we unionize, which is always a possibility. Everything seems to be going well. I got health benefits. What are you going to do? Good question. One of the things they said they were going to do was fight for longer break times. Interesting response from the employees there. Note 16% were in favor of joining the union. The response from the employees there are, you know what? We think we can take care of that ourselves. We can handle that. One 41-year-old employee quoted, her name Melissa Charlton Myers, quoted as saying, I work hard for my money, and I don't want any of it going to a union that maybe can get us more pay or maybe can get us longer breaks. It's not worth the risk. Good point. Good point. Workers said they believe that they could resolve company issues without a third party. That was what some of the union workers who cited against unionization had to say. You know, it's like, it's the money they're going to take out of my pocket. The fact that I'm already making money. How much more can they negotiate from Amazon? And we do pretty well here. We have a decent relationship with managers, and we want longer breaks. We feel that we can handle that ourselves. So now Amazon has other issues. In fact, Chicago, where I would argue they probably stand a better chance of unionizing, although I don't know. Same problems that would exist in Chicago, but there was a protest at one of the Amazon Chicago facilities over what they say poor working conditions. So the unions are still out there endeavoring to take over, but shot down in flames in a big way they were with Amazon in Alabama. And that's the trend nationally. I mean, you know, and it makes sense. You already have OSHA rules in place, which govern workplace conditions, so a union isn't going to necessarily better your workplace condition. If you're already meeting OSHA standards, it's a pretty safe work environment. Obviously, minimum wage, but then again, when you have a tight real or tight job market that results in pay being higher, and I noted that there are fast food restaurants hiring. You pay attention to the number of small businesses and entry level positions hiring. You can see the posted pay scale, and they are nowhere near minimum wage. They're far exceeded minimum wage. So, you know, I'm not quite sure what a union would do. How much can it possibly help? And you look at what some unions have done. I look at the teachers union, for example, and all the harm that it's bringing about to our young people that they are ignoring and don't care about. Talked about that in the last hour. And speaking of damage, excuse me, I hit my off button on the mic. Speaking of damage being done to our children, this lack of social interaction that was analyzed in Los Angeles, the fact that the grades have gone down, kids not even participating, huge swaths of children not even bothering to log onto the Zoom. And now their mental emotional health is suffering as well. Remote learning, they say the mental health experts at the CDC, if you want to listen to the CDC, sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. Anyway, remote learning may pose more of a mental health risk to our children. Nearly 25% of parents whose children received virtual instruction reported worsened mental and emotional health in their children, probably in themselves as well. Patients of children in remote learning say their children were less physically active, spent less time outside, and less time with friends. 54% of those parents also reported their own emotional distress. Ah, I was right, compared with 38% of parents whose children learned in person. Of course, the CDC recently released guidance for K-12 students to safely reopen for in-person learning. That flies right in the face of this teacher who I read about earlier screaming at her children about their parents who have the audacity to tell teachers they need to be back in school teaching in front of classrooms. The CDC has already emphasized it's okay. Children pose about zero threat and risk of, you know, getting problematic levels of COVID themselves, you know, dangerous or threatening, life-threatening, and they don't spread it. We've learned a lot since last year. We got the teachers' union standing in the way of moving forward and doing tremendous amount of harm to our children. This is revealing. I'm not sure if the Amazon vote had any connection with that, but certainly in terms of marketing and what unions are doing to our children, obviously unions are doing a great job of representing the people that they represent, and that is not your children. That is the teachers themselves. At least in areas like Los Angeles, they are raising their collective union representative metaphorical middle finger at every parent out there because they've all got vaccines and the CDC has said it's safe to come back, and yet they don't want to go back. What's wrong with this picture? 616-55KRC, the talk station, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Hit pound 550 if you have an AT&T phone, and call Bud Herbert Motors if you want.
pathetic.
Yeah, some have called John Boehner that. 6:21 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Hope you're having a decent Monday. Give it time. Hang out here all morning. Good show lined up. Thanks to Joe Stracker, executive producer. We're going to go over to the phone. Speaking of John Boehner and the soundbite we get from John every once in a while. he had this to say. This the other day is really on a tear against a lot of the Republicans. Bomb throwers, the ones he hates the most. He says, and he has one, and he singles out in particular. That would be Ted Cruz. There's nothing, this is his word, John Boehner, there is nothing more dangerous than a reckless, hold on a second, I got to get a reading. I want to make sure I'm allowed to say it in the way it's, well, I you'll get it. I can't use the word that John Boehner used, but he will summarize it as reckless a-hole who thinks he's smarter than anyone else. Ladies and gentlemen, meet Senator Ted Cruz. Now, Ted didn't take that one lying down. John Boehner also told him to go F-word himself. Yeah, I know. Leaked audio recording had Boehner saying that one. I think Ted had this to say over the weekend. I think he probably was recording at 9 or 10 in the morning, so obviously he had too much wine that day already. This guy is a little unhinged. Ted Cruz retort. Going after John Boehner for his widely known wine consumption. Anyway, let's go to Dave. The reason I bring that back up is Dave's on the phone. He's got a comment about John Boehner. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show and a happy Monday to you.
Yes, Andrew. Yeah, I am so tired of feckless little failures like John Boehner. When they fail, they blame everybody else. Everyone else is weak, paranoid, bomb thrower. Never mind that, drunk or sober, and too often drunk, he was such a weak and ineffectual person. It's everybody else's fault.
Yeah, but he cried a lot, Dave. He showed his emotion, and he wore his heart on his sleeve for all to witness. That's kind of a form of virtue signaling, one could argue.
Well, that's what we wanted to do. We would elect Oprah Winfrey for the position.
Well, he admitted, Dave, that he doesn't believe that he could get elected today if he ran. He also said Ronald Reagan couldn't get elected today, and I'm not quite so sure that he's accurate about Reagan, but I'm certain he's accurate in his own assessment about his chances for reelection. Good to hear from you, Dave. You stay well and have a great week. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on AT&T phones. I guess I have to just wonder out loud, why did John Boehner even open his mouth? What possible benefit could he get? I mean, he appears to be a bit hypocritical, doesn't he? But he campaigned or championed his entire life against marijuana and to keep it as criminal, and now he's with an organization to push it. I mean, what's with that? Oh, that's right, money. I forgot. The job of many politicians is to make as much money as they can while they are politicians and hopefully parlay that into a very lucrative post-political career, even if it does mean going against everything you used to champion while you were a politician. It's revealing about one's character, isn't it? I would argue. Some would call it hypocritical. Some would say it's more revealing of, you know, what it is to be a politician versus what it is to be in the private sector. Clearly, he is a more freedom-minded person in his private sector activities than he was as a politician. Well, that's an interesting reality, isn't it? Coming up at 6:45, 55 KRC, the talk station, which means we'll have a Sean Hannity. It is 6:30. At 55 KRCD Talk Station. Let's get a little note card out here. A time for local stories. Phone calls are always welcome. If you want to call and comment about something going on in the world, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK, #550 on your AT&T phone. I just had to bring this up because I was taken aback by this. Walking by Big Dog Tony Bender's office on Friday. I said, oh, Tony, you got a package. There's a big package sitting on his desk. And he goes, oh, actually, that's yours. I said, really? He said, yeah, and it's open. It's a large, probably 25, 30 inches wide box, about 4 inches deep. Turns out there is a framed poster in there, and it's from Dan Reginald of Frame USA. And it was a picture of three very large pallets of food that were donated to the Fill the Truck campaign. And it was, congratulations, your publicity helped this, bring about this. And what happened was that one of my listeners, and God bless you, whoever you are, and he didn't identify this person by name, but he said on the last day of the Fill the Truck at 4:59 p.m., was a minute before the cutoff, one of the 55 KRC Morning Show listeners donated $3,600. That's $600 to each of the six charities, which allowed them to go out and buy 3,000 jars of peanut butter for these, you know, poor, impoverished children that they help. He said, you know, he just wanted me to see the impact of the efforts, and God bless my listeners for supporting this campaign. But he starts off this note that was included in the box. You're like, what the hell are you telling us this for, Thomas? He said, sorry, I'm a little late getting this to you. The note in the upper left-hand corner by Dan Reginald's letterhead on the note says June 21st, 2016. Now, the Fill the Truck campaign that Dan was referring to ended in December of 2015, hence his, I'm a little late getting this to you. I got the package last Friday, and I'm puzzled. I'm like, a little late. If this note is dated 2016, so I'm like, okay, either this thing's been sitting around here for more than 5 years or something was wrong. I look at the box and the labeling on the shipping information. It's been sitting around here for more than 5 years. Joe, I know, it doesn't surprise me either, Joe. Isn't that the saddest thing? But it took all that time for me to finally get to the point of me even bringing this up. No, it's not that I'm making fun of my employer or the situation with the mailroom here. Obviously, this preceded COVID-19. No one is around here now. It's been an empty place for the last year. Fine. I just want to thank the listener who donated $3,600 and made a lot of children happy by putting a meal in their stomach 5 years ago. Local stories, issue one and issue two, you got those to consider coming up here on this election, and it's fast approaching. Issue three, we all know, is a no. Please do not hamstring the budget of the city of Cincinnati by forcing them to allocate at minimum $50 million a year up front for what they call affordable housing. Oh, speaking of which, you know, it's going to be a bunch of not-for-profits managing that money if you do give it to them. And I see that the Black Lives Matter co-founder has just got done buying a multi-million-dollar home, or at least a $1.4 million home close to Malibu, and has recently purchased in real estate in the amount of $3.2 million. Moving on up, huh? So remember, not-for-profits do pay massive salaries in some cases. Anyway, back to issue one, introduced by Vice Mayor Christopher Smitherman. It's going to require the city to appoint a special prosecutor whenever there is a statewide action to remove a council member from office. And we all know about this because thanks to P.G. Sittenfeld and the rest who've been indicted and or copped a plea to federal offenses. Christopher, Vice Mayor Smitherman, and this could happen after the council member has either been indicted for a felony or a criminal complaint has been filed related to that member's official duties. Concerns about conflict of interest, and this was the point, is it would prevent a conflict of interest where the city solicitor would essentially have to prosecute his or her boss. That does create a problem. Issue one also prevents council members, once indicted for felony or criminal charge related to the official conduct, from changing his or her successor designation certificate. Basically, each council member currently chooses a colleague or colleagues to select a replacement member. This amendment would prevent an indicted council member, from changing the person who selects the replacement. Issue two, what does that one do? Allow Cincinnati City Council to suspend a colleague who has been indicted, but not yet convicted, for a felony that relates to council duties. It would require 7 votes. Suspension would be paid, but if the council member were ultimately convicted, the city could take back any money paid during a suspension. Sounds to me like good ideas both. And, of course, anything that would stem the corruption going on at Cincinnati City Council would be welcome. The problem is these are after the corruption has been identified. The subject of an indictment or a criminal complaint means the activity has already occurred. Would issue one and issue two, if passed, act as a deterrent to criminal activity? I doubt it. But it certainly would streamline the process in the event it happens again. 636, 55 KRC, the talk station. Time to mention Affordable Medical Imaging, which is a great operation. Affordable Medical Imaging, it is, well, the place to go for your MRI, your CT scans, your ultrasounds. Because if you go to the hospital, which is where your physician will send you, you'll get the prescription, you'll go to the hospital, and that's where they'll charge, well, maybe $1,000 or something, or $2,000 or $3,000 for any one of these. Echocardiogram, I believe, is the most expensive procedure that, Affordable Medical Imaging does, and it's only $495. Ultrasound, a mere $250. CT scan, $350. And it's 641 right now at 55 KRC Talk Station. Have you been a decent Monday? Stick around. And if you can't stick around, go to the podcast page, 55KRC.com. I encourage you to do that. My dad will be up after top of the hour news. Not sure what's on his mind, but it's called the Monday Morning Spleen Vent for those who regularly tune in. Something's got under his skin. We'll find out together after the top of the hour news. 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Hit pound 550 if you have an AT&T phone. Going back to the damage that has befallen our children as a consequence of this COVID thing. And I just was blown away by that op-ed piece from the editorial board of the Wall Street Journal, Education Tragedy in Los Angeles, just exclamation point on the effects that this has had on our children. You know, and beneath that, virtual school damaging to children's mental health, according to the CDC. And then stupid things like this, which really just... It's more than things that make you go, it's things that make you want to pull your hair out and scream at the top of your lungs. What in the hell is wrong with people? It was the New Hampshire track coach who was on Tucker Carlson, and I really enjoyed Tucker Carlson. I guess he's brilliant. Anyway, got fired. After informing the school's athletic director he would not allow his athletes to wear masks while they are competing outdoors. In an email to the Pembroke Academy athletic director, the guy that was fired, Frank Vezina. The athletic director's name is Frank Vezina. Bradley Keyes is the guy that got fired. And this was a part-time job for him. So he called the decision to require masks during events senseless, irrational, and cowardice. Barbara Streisand, although he didn't use the word Barbara Streisand. I will not stand up in front of the kids, he said, and lie to them and tell them that these masks are doing anything worthwhile out in an open field with wind blowing and the sun shining. I will not deceive them into thinking that these restrictions are somehow necessary or sensible. I regret putting you in this position. Fire me if you must. And of course they did. They fired him for pointing out the obvious. He said before he sent the message, he actually did his own demonstration. He said he himself ran some 200 and 400 meter sprints with a mask on. He said, I knew it was going to be bad. Everything has to come through the fabric. It takes extremely exhausting races, and it makes them significantly worse. And then I got to thinking about what's happening with any particles that are coming off the mask. What are you actually breathing into your lungs over and over again? I got even more concerned about the possible health effects. So he hoped that any administrator at Pembroke Academy would have spoken up in defense of the policy. In other words, we got your note. Let me just point out why, Mr. Keyes, you're wrong. Why it is a health and safety risk to these young people to be outdoors running around in the sun and wind and still need to have a mask. Here are all the reasons why. No, they wouldn't do that. They couldn't do that. That is the point he was making. He said, I haven't heard anything. I'm thinking we won't because I don't think there is a way to stand up and justify this. Yeah, you're right. Because the CDC has already said, kids, back in school, you can do it. We're wasting our time with this lockdown stuff, so back at it. It's caused more than just that. Headline, maybe we'll be able to get to this one coming up next. Most Americans say pandemic stress has ruined their bedroom performance. Jeez. $6.50 right now, 55 KRCD Talk Station. Happy Monday, Money Monday. It's also Spleen Vent Monday. And Josh Mandel coming up at 7:40 on a whole variety of topics. And I really think Josh is a fantastic human being. I think he's going to make a wonderful senator. And we'll dive into insights into what he's running on and what he hopes to accomplish. And anything maybe in particular about his opposition, Jane Timken, for example. Brian James, our money expert, coming up at 8:05, talking about the Dow and S&P records and the housing market and a bunch of other topics. We'll hear from Bob McEwen about a power use seminar that's coming up on trade policy and third-party money. And finally, one of the experts from OHC, the cancer specialist, we'll hear from Dr. Matt Bertke, a radiation oncologist, to talk about head and neck cancer. Always an enlightening, informative, and usually uplifting on some level conversation because all the wonderful cures they seem to be, or well, maybe not cure yet, but we seem to be getting closer and closer to a cancer cure. And so we'll hear from the good doctor. In the last segment of the program, you can call if you'd like, 749-5500, 800-823-TALK. Been talking a little bit about the pandemic and most of the problems I find with it, the way we reacted. We've learned a lot over the last year and a half or year. Children should be back in school, and the devastating effect on children is just cannot be understated. And new study after new study after new study is just talking about how terrible this has been, what a toll it's taking, and what a lasting toll this is going to have. And we've also learned a lot, particularly about teachers' union and what they really, truly care about, which is clearly not the health, or rather, it's clearly not the children they care about, but it's rather, I guess, staying home and doing Zoom classes. I don't know. But what other impact has this had? Apparently stress has ruined, couples' bedroom performance. We have a new study out. 56% of Americans say that the anxiety about the state of the world had a negative impact on their sex life last year. About 55%, roughly the same number, added that stress resulting from work or job seeking has dampened their sex drive during the coronavirus pandemic. This is a survey of 2,000 Americans, all of whom describe themselves as at least in some way sexually active, either alone or with a partner. They factored those lonely people into the equation. Anyhow, showing the negative impacts that last year had on sexual satisfaction of those who reported a negative impact due to anxiety, 6 in 10 had less frequent sex last year. Survey also examined respondents' performance anxiety. 6 in 10 Americans over the past year have felt two in their head during sex, not in a good way, meaning their mind was playing games with the situation that they were in. 56 experiencing sexual performance anxiety or concerns that their sexual performance might not meet their partner's wants, needs, or expectations. Nearly 3/4, 73%, who experienced this said that they felt it more often because of the pandemic. Now, I'm really struggling to try to draw a comparison between the two. You don't have confidence in yourself in terms of your performance generally. This has been a well-known concept for a long time. But what does the pandemic have to do with that? I'm not sure they dove down into that particular question, but for 3/4 of respondents, the issue is a pressing one. They add that it's extremely or very important to them that they overcome their sexual anxiety. Please, dear God, let me overcome it. There's a problem. I'm surprised that the number's only 3/4. No, I enjoy my performance anxiety. I have no desire to have to overcome it. Anyway, according to the researchers, heightened stress impacts your nervous system and your body will enter the fight, flight, or freeze mode. Your nervous system communicates to your body that survival is the priority, and sex and libido are deprioritized on a biological level. Stress levels can also impact your level of arousal as well as desire and more. So addressing the stress levels first is key. That according to the sex educator who did this particular study, Keanu Reeves. Not Keanu. 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 K-I-A-N-A. Anyway, She went on to say, when it comes to desire and arousal, slowing down and taking your time is essential, incorporating all natural sexual wellness formulas. And then they put a plug in for CBD oil. Can also assist with relaxation, pleasure, and arousal. Anyway, coronavirus getting you down. Look, the way I view this is the world's filled with stresses. This is this activity we're referring to is a wonderful way of getting rid of and alleviating stress. They even pointed out in the article, pleasure helps reduce stress and promotes well-being. And you're spending a lot of time at home. Why don't you use COVID-19 rather than view it as this big, oh my God, noose around your neck hardship? Why not view it as your advantage? Hey, it's given me more time alone at home with my loved one. Let's work on our game. Let's have a smile on our face about it. It's going to be fun. That's my attitude anyway. 655 coming up at 656. 55 KRC, the talk station. My dad, Jerry Thomas, doing the Monday morning spleen vent right after the news, and I sure hope you can stick around.
Hear about it, talk about it. 55 KRC, the talk station.
Trigger alert. Trigger alert. This is a 55 KRC trigger alert.
706, 55 KRC, the talk station, the must play trigger warning alert, because guess who's on the line? My dad, Jerry Thomas. Time for the Monday morning spleen vent. Hey, Dad, how are you? Hope you had a good weekend.
Yeah, real good. And I'm happy to say that your mom and I finally got our COVID shot after all this waiting around.
Oh, yeah, you had gotten your first one seemingly a long time ago, and you finally were able to get your second one this past week. How long did it take you between the two when you finally were able to get in? Because it was the appointment you couldn't get. They were filled up.
Yeah. How long had we waited for that?
Yeah, it was like at least 6 weeks, maybe more.
Well, it was only about a month.
Oh, really? Because I remember talking to Mom. So we're having a tough time finding an appointment or getting an appointment. But you went back to the Cintas Center again, didn't you? I think that's where you went the first time.
Actually, downtown.
The
main place.
Oh, good.
Anyhow, we finally got that. But I wanted to ask you, what the heck is going on with Boehner?
I don't know. I have no idea why he even bothered to open his mouth, but apparently he went on a tear the other day, critical of Republicans generally, talking about the state of the political world, that the GOP has been taken over by kooks and crazies. He referred to the sixth thing as a bloody insurrection, and he blamed all of it on Donald Trump completely. He claims, I don't think Ronald Reagan would recognize the Republican Party today, and he even said, I don't think Ronald Reagan could even get elected today. I mean, really?
I don't understand what's on his mind. Maybe he's lost his mind.
Well, maybe. How about this, Dad? We all know that he is fond of the grape. Maybe this is sour grapes. Got a bad glass of wine.
Yeah, well, that's true.
Or W-H-I-N-E, as the case may be, depending upon.
A little of both.
Yeah, perhaps.
Well, anyhow, I want to get into this. Once again, the Democrats are off to the racists. The racists. Now, every time they can't explain their position, they go off to the racists.
Mm-hmm.
And we, the Republicans, become the racists once again. And it looks like that's what they're doing. And the left is using this ploy in Georgia. They're calling us out, all the Republicans, for suppressing black voters' chances to vote in a fair election. Now, why and how are we doing that? Here's the kicker. They have to use an ID to vote. Come on now. A driver's license, and that's given to them.
Free,
asking.
State IDs are free if you cannot afford them.
That's exactly right. But as my cousin Bill, who lives in Georgia, says, when I was talking to him not long ago, he says, when you have a big corporation like Delta Airlines and Coca-Cola warning voters that they're going to lose their votes every single day on television, and they have it in the paper somewhere or on the TV, they start buying into the lie. So today, you and I are the bad guys. I want you to know that. And we are the racists, and you're going to hear more of that. And they will do it again. I want to point this out. They will do it again in Cincinnati in the next election, the very same thing, and they'll have the help of big corporations. So be prepared. They'll start down the same road.
I guess I have to ask out loud, and I'm not necessarily hitting you up for an answer to this, but it seems perplexing to me that the big corporations would think that voting without proof of identity is a good idea. How and in what way, shape, or form, is not only does it not benefit America generally, it draws into question, of course, the integrity of the election, because there's a giant hole there, like, wow, how can you, did you verify that that is who is voting? But that it would help them, that they have some sort of benefit to be gained by advocating for it. That's, to me, baffling. It's baffling.
It doesn't make sense
no,
at all.
Not to me, it doesn't. No, I'm glad it doesn't make sense to you either.
It's like John Boehner. What can I say? Now, if you don't know that Joe Biden is a mess, you have not been paying attention, my friend.
Clearly.
And he has been wrong on every foreign decision made. He has halted construction of Trump's border wall, which has led to hundreds of thousands of illegals pouring in. And believe it or not, incompetent Joe told the Homeland Security employees last week, are you ready? They may restart border wall construction.
Yeah.
What the hell is with them? Huh? Anyhow, the huge surge of illegal people got the red carpet from Joe, and they got free everything. You may ask, how does America feel about the giveaway crisis taking place at our border? Well, a new nationwide poll showed up with over 53% disapproving of Biden's handling of our border.
Shocking.
Oh, boy. That's a bunch. And now, if you're wondering where is Biden's wonderful helper Kamala, and what does she say?
Day 19, Dad. Day 19.
Well, Kamala is a perfect match for Joe. The two of them really make a great pair there. And she is pretty much into looking at the decorations in her office and kitchen renovation. That's what she's been doing a lot of.
Well, is that why it's been 19 days since she was appointed to take care of the immigration crisis and she hasn't said a single syllable on it?
Yeah, she's been spending a lot of time doing that. And this must be a winner. Because I can announce it now, Kamala just listed her mansion for $55 million.
Whoa!
Hey, baby.
Whoa!
It proves beyond a doubt it's good to be king and queen.
And queen. Isn't that the truth? Huh? But how she gets away with not talking about something that is her whole responsibility. I mean, as Vice President of the United States of America, you know, you don't have a tremendous amount of constitutionally provided for responsibilities. You're there to pick up the pieces in the aftermath if the president somehow is incapable of fulfilling the term of office. But if you are told that you're responsible for the border crisis and you're the politician who's been given this responsibility, every politician, I think, under the sun would probably salivate at the idea of getting out in front of the cameras and celebrating, oh, it's me and I'm going to fix it and here's what I'm going to do and I've been down there and I've seen it firsthand. And clearly she cannot do that. One, she hasn't been to the border to visit to see it herself anytime recently. And two, I think she is painfully aware of how bloody awful the conditions down there and that they do not have an answer. That Donald Trump's, it would require them to admit that Donald Trump's policies actually worked to stem the flow of humanity coming across our border. The minute they got rid of them, look what happened. How can you, she's in a corner. She's got the deer in the headlights look. Only problem is, nobody puts her on camera to see the deer in the headlights look because she won't subject herself to that situation. She knows she's going to be asked questions. And much like Joe Biden, unless somebody's written them down for her in advance, she's not going to be able to answer them.
It just blows me away how much they get away with that would kill a Republican.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Nobody even blinks an eye.
Well, you're blinking, I'm blinking, we're both talking about it, and more people should be talking about it.
They absolutely should. if they wanted to have a job, do your job.
Yeah. Oh, and she's a self-professed socialist kind of person, too. That's interesting that she just made $55 million on the sale of a house. Do you think that money's going to go to charity, or that she will redistribute that wealth to people within the community or something like that? I wouldn't be holding my breath on that.
Yeah, that's going to go to charity.
Yeah.
Sure, fine.
Did you see the self-professed Marxist co-founder of Black Lives Matter just got done buying a whole bunch of property? She bought a $1.4 million home in a place called Topanga, about 30 minutes by Malibu. Black population, 1.4%.
Does anybody ask any questions?
I'm asking out loud, what the hell's the deal on this? And it's just one of multiple properties, but wow. You'd think that she would want to put that money back into the community that's been so oppressed by, well, I guess us. I don't know. Dad, hang on. I know you got more to talk about. It's 7:15 right now. We'll take a quick break here and give me an opportunity to mention a great company. It's 7:19 at 55 KRC Talk Station. Brian Thomas here with my dad, Jerry Thomas, doing the Monday morning spleen bet. Coming up, Josh Mandel. He'll be on at 7:40. Talk about getting kicked out of that RNC event in Florida. Jane Timken was allowed to stay, though. Whether or not Josh Mandel ever had to interact with John Boehner, a question posed by Joe Strecker and worth asking. And finally, the court packing, as well as D.C. Endeavors to make D.C. a state, that kind of thing, clearly designed for Democrats to take over permanently and then direct all the affairs of your life from that point forward. Brian James with Money Monday coming up at 8:05. Dad, I don't know what else is on your mind, but real quick here, because I mentioned that Black Lives Matter buying that $1.4 million home. Listen to this. It's sort of a side event. It has to do with that, but there's a sports journalist. His name is Jason Whitlock. He also is black. Called out this Black Lives Matter co-founder, Patrice Cullors, over her purchase of that home in the virtually all-white neighborhood of Topanga. Here's what he had to say. Quote, Black Lives Matter founder buys $1.4 million home in Topanga, which has a black population of 1.4%. She's with her people, exclamation point, close quote. So whether or not you agree with that statement, he's entitled to make it. But you know what happened because of that statement?
What?
Twitter police pulled his account and suspended it. They removed that post. A black person making that factually accurate quote, although sarcastically saying she's with her people, that's enough to get you kicked off of Twitter. Go figure. Anyhow. Truth
to
power.
It's all even. Nobody gets an extra edge anywhere.
Yeah, I'm sure. Unless you're a leftist. Go ahead, Dad. You got something else to talk about.
Got something from the It's About Damn Time department.
All right.
Yeah. The Pennsylvania Department of State last week agreed to remove 200,000 dead voters from the state's voting rolls in a settlement with an election integrity group. Commissioners removed all the dead people.
And that took a lot of effort to get it done. That was something that was being resisted by which party, I imagine?
Take a guess.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Democrats.
The commissioners remove all the dead people, and I say it took them long enough to admit there was something wrong with their election numbers. Donald Trump told them a long time ago it was wrong. Ooh, baby. And Biden is pushing for more people to lose their Second Amendment rights now, as you know. And on top of that, the worst part of this whole thing is the red flag laws. And I'd just like to say the problem is every ex-wife or crazy neighbor could notify the police and flag you and zap. That is it.
Yeah.
And your gun is gone.
Yeah. Yeah. By some ex parte hearing, you'll be told later after they confiscate your firearms that it's pursuant to some a restraining order that some judge put in place when you weren't there to bother to be able to defend yourself. And you have to lawyer up and go into court and fight the issuance of that seizure order that the judge put into place. And let me tell you, that's going to cost you a lot of money unless you're lucky enough to get one of these foundations out there in the world to provide you with free legal help. But I wouldn't be holding my breath waiting for that one to happen.
And if somebody flags you, your gun is gone. Any Christian, Jew, conservative, or Trump supporter could get tagged under the red flag thing. And I,
well,
I
because of being Christian, Jewish, or a Trump supporter.
It doesn't matter.
In and of itself, that's it. You're a religious fanatic. Take your gun away. You are a Trump supporter. We've already labeled you a racist cuckoo. Take your gun away. That's proof positive. DSM-5. They got a new diagnosis. If you support Trump, you're bat crap crazy. So say it, the leftists.
And there's only one thing about one way to stop gun violence. And put murderers on death row. Yeah. And anybody killing a police officer, it's an automatic, with a gun, it should be an automatic death sentence. And see if that doesn't slow that kind of stuff down.
Yeah. Well, this is where you and I will part company, because I don't believe the state should have the power to take life. You know why? Because the state screws up every day. Giving them more authority. Giving them authority over the taking of life. I mean, think about that. We rail against the state and their stupidity every single day. The dumb rules they come up with and the stupid positions that they come up with. And the ineffectiveness of a lot of the, well, let's face it, the prosecutorial reality of the world. I mean, ask any black person out there. They think the system is rigged against them. Well, the system quite often is rigged against innocent people. DNA evidence has exonerated people on death row. Time and time again, they get it wrong. And if you expand the state's power and you make the death penalty more available to them, think about how many more times wrong they would get. I think about the gulags and the purging of political opposition by Stalin and Castro and all the other dictatorial countries out there. They have the power to kill. They'll use it.
Well, they could put John Boehner in charge of that, you know?
Yeah, I mean? Sure. That'll work. Hey, every once in a while, Dad, you and I disagree. That's okay. I understand where the sentiment comes from. I do.
Yeah.
And just look at, when you erode and eviscerate law enforcement power like they have in these defund cities, statistically, you can see it. Over the past year, the cities that have done that have become more violent, more murders. If the deterrent isn't there, officers on the street, handing out tickets, issuing citations, and arresting people, then the crime is going to become rampant, period, end of story.
Yeah, and if a cop is going to pull you over, you don't run.
Yeah, especially if you have an outstanding warrant.
Exactly.
And also, on that note, Dad, we can just end with this one. Before you decide it's worthy of protesting or riding in the street, because I know very little about the one you just mentioned. I saw the article. The guy did try to flee. He was being pulled over for an outstanding warrant. The cop opened fire. He's now dead. I don't know if it was justified. You know why? Because I don't have the facts yet.
Yeah.
I think it's worthy that all of us take a moment to pause, and before we go burning things down and rioting, we might want to find out what exactly happened. Amen. Dad, I love you. Please pass along love to Mom, and you and I will talk, I know, during the week. But until next week, stay well, and smile, right?
I love you, man.
Talk later. 7:26 right now. Seven 30 right now at 55 KRCD Talk Station. Coming up at 7:31. Looking forward to the return of Josh Mandel. Talked to him many times over the years, and even recently. But running for, of course, the soon to be vacant Senator Rob Portman seat, and trying to secure the Republican nomination or the Republican endorsement. Anyway, Jane Timken has something to say about that. We'll see what he has to say about getting booted from that event. I guess it was over this past weekend. Got Josh Mandel being, in their words, escorted out of the Republican gathering. As a Republican National Committee in Palm Beach, they rented out an entire hotel. Mandel, well, when they started, after they started the events, they told him he had to leave. He didn't have the right credentials. He wasn't invited. But Jane Timken was there. She was able to stay. I'll let you decide who's the better candidate. We'll find out from Josh Mandel, give you a little insight to what he's all about. Local stories. City of Cincinnati has agreed to pay $6 million to Kyle Plush's family to settle the wrongful death lawsuit that was filed against the dispatchers and a couple of the police officers. You may recall that he was trapped in his minivan. He was able to voice call 911. and help never arrived. The officers showed up to the parking lot, and they drove around, they looked, they couldn't find him. Apparently a little confusion about the dispatcher passing along sufficient information for the officers to find him. Bottom line, $6 million settlement with some promises to change how the dispatch worked. City is pledging to make more improvements to the 911 center in connection with this settlement. Begins with $250,000 to hire 3 outside experts to check out the 911 operation. Oversight will last 5 years. The settlement says, and it also stipulates that improvements recommended by the experts must be made. And that's fine. And I'll pause right now and use this as a moment to comment on issue 3. How in that? Well, flexibility. We're going to have less money coming into the city coffers. We're already planned to have $20 million deficit, right? John Cranley is trying to put some of the COVID-19 money parked aside to cover for the upcoming deficits. You're going to have a fewer dollars coming into the city of Cincinnati for all the reasons we've talked about before, which is earnings tax generates 80% of the income that goes into the general fund. 2/3 of that 80% come from people who don't live in the city but work there or did until COVID came along. So you got a budget problem on your hands. Then, lo and behold, liability issues crop up from time to time. Shocked to find gambling going on here. Little unexpected expenditures of capital that you didn't realize at the outset of the year you were going to have to pay, like, $6 million to help the to settle this lawsuit. Or alternatively, pledging money to fix the 911 center. How much is it going to cost? Do you know, for example, what this oversight board, these 3 outside experts, are going to recommend to the city that, according to the settlement documents, must be made, at least in terms of the improvements? Do you have any idea what the improvement? No, of course you don't. You can't see into the future. Neither can anybody on council or the mayor or the city manager. But what they can see into the future is planning for unexpected line items like the caving in of Columbia Parkway. Wow. Gee, there's some millions of dollars that we didn't allocate money for. Out of the general fund or capital improvement budget or wherever it comes from, money's fungible. You should consider it all in one big pile. So now we have an additional $250,000 expenditure that we didn't have prior to the settlement, and we have some unknown expenditures insofar as fixing the 911 system. I'm not saying those fixes aren't going to be necessary. I'm just saying it's one more expense that the city has to now cover. That's why you don't want to mandate $50 million off the top for anything. You don't want to say a specific sum certain, especially in quantities that size, will be taken from the general fund every year forever, adjusted for inflation. Because, something might happen that you haven't budgeted for. If for no other reason, issue 3 is bad for that one alone. It takes away the flexibility that is needed by the city of Cincinnati to deal with the complexities and the challenges of running a big city. 735 right now, 55 KRC, the talk station. Josh Mandel up next. He'd like your vote for... It is coming up on 741 at 55 KRC Talk Station. Brian Thomas right here. And always, always have a smile on my face when Josh Mandel's on the 55 KRC Morning Show. Welcome back, Josh Mandel, former Ohio treasurer for the state of Ohio and person who absolutely is going to become senator taking over Rob Portman's seat. It's good to have you on the show, sir.
Thanks, Brian. Always good to be on.
And as always, I'd like to start by thanking you for your service to our country. Of course, you served proudly in the Marine Corps. As well as your political office service, and wishing you the best of luck as we move forward. Jane Timken, I guess, is she your sole Republican side challenger for that seat, Josh, as we talk about primaries?
You know, the media is trying to write that story like it's me versus her, but to be honest, there's going to be a lot of people in the race, and I'm not even sure she's going to be our main competition at the end of the day, just because she defended the impeachment of President Trump. And she's flip-flopped on a bunch of issues. And I think at the end of the day, Republicans and especially movement conservatives and Trump warriors like you and me and your listeners, they're just not going to want someone like her who defended the impeachment against President Trump. I was very anti-impeachment. I think it was a sham. I think it was unconstitutional. Yeah. And, you know, I think we need constitutional conservatives in Washington who are going to stand up against the Democrats when they try to do these things that are run totally counter to the Constitution, run totally counter to conservative values and to the Trump America First agenda. So to answer your question, there's going to be a lot of people running in this race, but there's only one who has a steel spine, who took on Kasich, who's taking on DeWine now on these shutdowns, and who's going to go to Washington to blow up the system, and that's me.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that. Yeah, I've been a little disappointed in Governor DeWine of late. He has become sort of Kasich-esque in his dealing with this coronavirus situation here in the state of Ohio. I believe in the rule of law, and in order to issue a mandate or an edict of some sort that we are supposed to follow under fear or concern of prosecution, there has to be an underlying law that gives them the authority or purports to give them the authority to do it in the first place. And court after court after court is now telling Governor DeWine that, dude, you or your health director never had this authority to lock healthy people down, only sick people. I mean, that's what the law says. You don't like it, change the law.
Exactly. So I've been leading the charge against Governor DeWine because I believe he took the big hand of government and used it to trample on our liberty with the government shutdowns. And it's at the end of the day, this fight on the shutdowns and the mask mandates and the vaccine passports, this is a fight about liberty.
Yes.
And like I'm always going to fight for our liberty as Americans, as families, as small business owners. And what DeWine and Amy Acton and Fauci and all these big government types around the country did was trample on our liberty. And I'll tell you, Brian, something that really gets under my skin. So DeWine, he allowed Costco and Target and Walmart and all these woke corporations, these big multinationals, to stay open. But then he shut down the little guys. He made all the mom and pops, family-owned restaurants and hardware stores and beauty shops and clothing shops and barber shops shut down. And it was just wrong. I mean, he literally did what we attacked the Democrats for. He picked winners and losers, and even worse, he picked these big woke corporations as the winners. It was just horrible, Brian. I was talking to a friend of mine who lives down in Marietta, and there's this small business down there called Schaefer Leather Goods. They've been open for 150 years through World War I, World War II, the Great Depression, the Spanish flu, but they couldn't stay open through Mike DeWine's shutdowns.
Oh,
and Brian, it's crazy. And Schaefer Leather Goods, they sell work boots and cowboy boots to folks in Marietta. And guess what happened? Because they were closed down, their customers went down the street to Walmart to buy work boots and cowboy boots made in China.
Yeah.
And the whole thing is just horrible.
It is. And see, this is not Josh Mandel or Brian Thomas saying that there is no COVID. This is not saying, because I had it. It sucked, Mr. Mandel. It sucked. This is not us saying that there are appropriate things to do that may help stop the spread or curb it, that there is scientific research out there that seems to be changing over time, the more we learn about it, but that there is accurate information out there, but that we should be free to follow it. This is our freedoms, our liberties, and you know, open our businesses as we see fit, not as we're told to run them or deprived of the ability to run by some government official. And That's again, not pursuant to any past law that we could test constitutionally in court. So frustrated as you are, Josh Mandel, let's talk more. We're going to take a quick break here. I know you have some party platforms you want to pass along to my listeners. And Joe Strecker wants to see if you ever had any interaction with John Boehner, who's gone on a bit of a tear against Republicans lately. More with Josh Mandel after I mentioned the Cincinnati VA, who would love you. Here's Josh Mandel. He's a veteran. I bet he's signed up. You got his VA health insurance benefits. You know what? You earned them. It was part of your salary. So if you got your honorable discharge, you should call the Cincinnati VA and just secure those benefits. It doesn't matter if you have insurance from some other source like your business or maybe you're through your spouse. You're eligible. If you didn't serve in combat, that does not matter. You're eligible. You served and you were honorably discharged. It's the only two criteria there. So misconceptions abound And you're not going to be taking service away from another veteran either. I know you love your fellow veterans, but it isn't going to harm them by you getting your care. So the VA Eligibility Office is who you need to contact. Get in touch with them today. 513-475-6499. That's 4- Talk. 749 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Brian Thomas here with Josh Mandel. He'd like your vote for U.S. Senate when we ultimately get the chance to do that. The field is broader than you might be led to believe because, as Josh pointed out in the last segment, big focus on Jane Timken. He used to be the chair of the Ohio Republican Party, and I guess that maybe taints her a little bit with the swamp. Given Josh's pointed out that she did approve of and supported going after Donald Trump for impeachment. So we have that by way of background, but there are other candidates running. What you need to do is go to joshmandel.com, learn some issues, where he is, who's supporting him, and also what I would recommend doing, since he is one of a very few number of politicians, but happens to be the very first politician I ever wrote a check for to support his election. Give to Josh Mandel's campaign. I'm sure he could use the support there. So joshmandel.com. Josh, I understand you got escorted out of the Republican National Committee gathering in Palm Beach. What happened there, Josh? Jane Timken was allowed to stay.
Well, let me just say this, Brian. The establishment is frightened and scared about people like me who are anti-establishment, who want to blow up the system in Washington, and who want to stand up for the Constitution and the Trump America First agenda.
Oh, people like John Boehner.
I mean, but I wear as a badge of honor when the establishment comes after me. You probably remember I was the first statewide official in Ohio to support President Trump when Jane Timken and all these other characters were supporting John Kasich to the bitter end.
Oh, wow.
I was the first statewide official in Ohio to support President Trump for president, and I was proud of it. And, you know, when Kasich was governor, I was at the pointy tip of the spear taking on Kasich.
Yeah,
when he tried to do the Obamacare Medicaid expansion,
oh,
when he tried to stuff Common Core down our throat. And, you know, you probably remember that fight against Common Core.
Oh, yes.
You know, that we were against all the big woke corporations, against Kasich, against all this money. And that fight started at Taya Shoemake's kitchen table. I remember sitting at Taya's kitchen table in Claremont County right there. And then there's a bunch of moms in Southwest Ohio who said, we don't want the government telling us how we're going to educate our kids. And we actually all went to a conference in South Bend at Notre Dame to get educated on how to combat Common Core. And then we came back and we fought it. And so I got the scars on my body from fighting the teachers unions, from fighting Kasich, and now from fighting DeWine. And just going back to these shutdowns real quick, Brian,
the vaccine
passport and all this stuff. Listen, those of us who know history, we knew last March what was coming. Never before in the history of the United States has government precluded a private individual's means of production. And by extension, I mean provision for their family and for their community. It makes my blood boil that the government got in the way of moms and dads being able to provide for their kids, put food on the table, put a roof over their head. And that's what DeWine and Amy Acton and Fauci and all these mini Faucis around the state and country did.
Well, you get no argument from me on, Josh. I guess you weren't looking to pick a fight with Brian Thomas.
And then also, so now, Brian, they want to do these vaccine passports. Let me tell you what that's the equivalent of. You know, for your listeners that aren't very familiar with the vaccine passports, those who support the vaccine passports, whether it's someone like Jane Timken or it's the Democrats, what they're saying is in order to go into Kroger to buy your groceries, when you get to the front door, someone's going to say to you,
"Let me see your papers."
Exactly.
Preferably in a German voice. This is no offense to Germans. I happen to be loved by the Germans because I love my German friends. So, but they would get the joke. Let me see your papers. We've seen that in so many World War II movies. It's a cliche.
But that's what the Democrats and the Faucis and the DeWines want to do. They want, before you go into a grocery store or a movie theater or a post office, they want there to be some goon at the front door saying, show me your health papers.
Yeah.
Like over my dead body, will that ever happen?
And Josh, think about this. Regardless of what Republicans might have to say on that particular issue, and I'd like to think that Republicans are the ones and defenders of the freedom and liberty, because it seems to be concepts that are eroding, but that the Democrats, any Democrat who is not in favor of election reform, that is not in favor of a photo ID, that they could go out and say, no, you must have a vaccine passport, which presumably, Josh, will have your photo on it, because they're going to need to prove who you are, right? Because otherwise, you can just print out photo or print out vaccine passports on the black market. So, yeah, but they don't require that to vote in an election, but to go buy groceries, that's really what they're advocating.
It's insane, right?
It's totally insane.
Yeah, it's hypocritical, but that's what happens. Like the radical left, you know, led by the Pelosi's and the Schumer's and the AOC's and Kamala Harris. You could say Biden, but I personally don't even think Biden's running the country right now.
Mm.
I think either Kamala Harris or Barack Obama or George Soros is running the country. And but the problem, Brian, is we have these squishy establishment Republicans on our side in our party, and we got to get rid of them. You know, whether it's a DeWine or it's someone else. I mean, they go to places like Hamilton County and Butler County and Claremont County, and they give speeches and talk about when they're campaigning, they ask for votes and money and say they're a conservative. And then they get to Columbus or they get to Washington and they act like a big government Democrat and they get drunk with power. And these shutdowns over COVID, the vaccine passports, all this stuff, it's all about power. It's all about these politicians wanting to exercise power over the people. And in my mind, it should be the total opposite. We, the people, should have power over the politicians.
Amen to that. Josh Mandel, cannot thank you enough for coming on the program. Again, I will strongly encourage my listeners, joshmandel.com is a place to go, read, donate. And I'm looking forward to having you back on the program as often as we can between now and the primary. When you're battling it out with whoever it happens to be, Josh, I've got your back.
Thanks, Brian.
Always my pleasure. 7:56 right now, 55KRCD Talk Station. Money Monday, yes, that's coming up after top of the hour news. We are also going to hear from Bob McEwen. Remember, Bob served 6 terms U.S. House of Representatives. He's going to be talking to us about his Empower You seminar. And we'll also be hearing from one of the great doctors at OHC. It's, it is another month, and today it's April. Well, Head and Neck Cancer Awareness Month, so we'll be here talking with Dr. Matt Berkey about that in the next hour as well. I hope you can stick around.
I won't give up the ship.
Talking about what matters.
This country is too great to throw over to communism. I love it.
55KRZ, the talk station.
Fast approaching 8:06 right now. 55KRZ, the talk station. It is Monday. Now, I know I'm stating the obvious, but that means it's Money Monday. I got Brian James on to answer some questions and talk about what's going on in the world of making money, preparing for your retirement, and getting ahead of the game. Brian, welcome back, and happy Monday to you. I hope you're well.
Back at you. Good to talk to you again.
Always a pleasure. So we have the Dow and S&P hitting records. Some question why. How is that possible amid this COVID thing and everything? But the market doesn't seem to have really been, I would argue, overall impacted by it. Certain sectors over the past year have, like the airline industry, of course, but the Dow, we're seeing records, and it never did get kicked in the crotch like a recession drop or an aftermath of the SNL crisis kind of drop. We never did see that. Any reason why, and what does it mean to see these big records right now?
Well, I think honestly, Brian, I think the primary reason that happens is honestly because we thought something else was going to happen. That is just the way the market works. This has been we did have a recession. It was fairly mild as regards other recessions. It was quick and sharp for sure. But in terms of getting, kind of dusting ourselves off and getting back to normal, that happened really quick, too. So, yeah, the market really never did, aside from literally a year ago now. Didn't really ever take a massive hit. And as we're sitting here right now, even year to date, the major indexes are up 10%.
Wow.
What's even more interesting to me is the it's not the NASDAQ. I mean, this stuff has been driven by the NASDAQ, which is all the sexy tech stuff. It's not that. It's other stuff. Have you noticed that?
Yes. It's an excellent point. I did write NASDAQ down here because it wasn't in my notes to ask about NASDAQ. But yeah, I mean, if something went on fire like the the dot-com boom, that was, of course, NASDAQ-related, and we all want to happen with that. We had a bubble, and it burst. And I would think that tech would be dominating and be exploding as well, too, because I think we've all learned that tech has saved the day and allowed us to continue working even though we're at home and doing it remotely. I mean, Zoom alone has allowed companies to continue to do business.
Yeah, that's right. And it's not to say the NASDAQ suddenly became a bad investment. This is actually a fairly new development as regards the market over the past 12 to 18 months. This is literally since January 1, the Dow and the S&P are the ones that are outpacing the market. They're outpacing everything else. They are the market. The reason for that is those types of companies, these are the biggest of the big and the oldest of the old. Nobody talks about the Dow Jones anymore. But it's the old industrial companies, and those are the ones who benefit from when we get a whiff of inflation, because they are invested in the kinds of things that will benefit from inflation. And this is not to sound the alarm bells that, oh my gosh, inflation is coming and the world's going to end. This is just to say it's a topic now that it didn't used to be. We have a long way to go before it's a problem, but it's something to pay attention to.
And in what way do you mean that these are the companies that benefit from inflation? I thought inflation generally impacted us all. If the dollar has less purchase power, it has less purchase power whether you're buying a widget or a baseball bat or something. I mean, it's reduced buying power per dollar.
Sure, but inflation by itself is not necessarily a bad thing. High inflation, quick inflation, that's horrible. Yeah, that's where you run into those situations we read about in the headlines, such as Venezuela and other countries where, you know, a Venezuelan dollar is now worth, a tenth of what it was the day before, that kind of thing. But regular inflation simply means that the prices of things is going up, which is generally supported by an economy that is healthy. That's why the Federal Reserve's goal is never to keep inflation at 0%. They always talk about it being somewhere between 2 and 3%, because that does tend to drive the economy. As prices go up, people tend to, companies tend to work harder to take advantage of that, and that tends to trickle down through the economy.
All right. Well, where do you see inflation? Because, I mean, there's already, we've seen inflation in the form of typical supply and demand type inflation. There are many products or goods in the world that are in short supply, a lot of because of, you know, the supply chain interruptions. You know, one ship blocks the Suez Canal, next thing you know, the price of a lot of goods are going up simply because they're parked somewhere and they can't get out to the public. Demand remains the same, supply is static or reduced. But there's a lot of things, and it's impacting, for example, food prices. I've seen food prices have ticked up. That's a real indicator of inflation. It is an inflationary reality that families are dealing with. And yet we hear these reports, and you even indicated that, you know, and yeah, people are talking about inflation, but it's nowhere near on this real problem that we're going to be facing anytime soon.
It could be. I'm not saying that it's not going to ever be an issue again. I'm simply saying that as of right now, should you take action because it is in the headlines more so than it was? No, we're not at a point where, you know, it's changed enough that it's going to drive, you know, immediate changes to things.
So, in terms of investment.
Correct,
you say take
correct,
action,
yeah.
Investment-wise, take action. All right, well, let's just run through a little hypothetical. Let's say you do see inflation looming on the horizon, and you know, people who are looking into it say, yeah, we think we're going to experience an unusual increase in inflation this year. How does one take action to deal with that? I hear you saying not time to take action yet, but what action would an investor take, someone who's got a 401k plan or a Roth 401k or has money invested in the markets, hopefully through a certified financial planner?
Yeah, and honestly, the biggest thing you can do is usually nothing, just like always.
That's kind of what I thought.
If you were invested appropriately to begin with, that means you're already invested in growth type of arrangements. If you are worried you're sitting in cash, you're sitting in bonds, you're going to take a hit. That's the scary part with inflation.
Okay.
Because inflation will eat away at the purchase price. And if you are not taking risk, that's going to hurt you.
Well, I mean, and again, inflation seems to not have a limited area where it hits. I mean, if across the board inflation is going up, won't the price of stocks also then become inflated along with the increase in inflationary pressures on goods and services?
Absolutely. And that's why the Federal Reserve wants to keep it. Not that they're trying to drive the stock market, but it's all connected together. That's why the goal is not to avoid inflation. It's to keep it under control in a reasonable rate that we can cope with.
All right. Now, you said something earlier, and I wanted to sort of focus on that for a moment, because the Dow and the S&P both hit record highs. We get that. Then you said, well, nobody looks at the Dow anymore. And I understand, I think, why you said that, because it is just a small chunk of stocks, hand-selected, the, you know, leading economic, or the largest, or I don't know how they're picked, to become a Dow-listed company, but it's a very small slice of reality, isn't it?
Yeah, it is. It's fairly arbitrary. So, you know, maybe the best way to explain that is to compare it against what people are more familiar with these days, which is the S&P 500. The Standard & Poor's 500 is nothing more than the 500 largest companies in the United States. You name a company. We've got several here locally. If it's a big company, it's in the S&P 500. And it gets reset periodically because company sizes change. The Dow, however, is a little more arbitrary. It's run by an organization that they are the ones who simply dictate. These are the 30 companies that we think are the bellwethers. For a long time, it was the oldest of the old. It was companies like, I don't remember, Amco and Kodak.
IBM.
This is not even grandpa's stocks. This is great grandpa's stocks at this point. So it's a little more modern nowadays. Apple is in there now. Home Depot, P&G is in the Dow 30. Salesforce.com. So there's some newer stuff in there, but there's also some of the older, more industrial things like Caterpillar and IBM and so forth. But the reason people don't look at it, it's not that they aren't valuable stocks. It's because it's been NASDAQ for 20 years. It's been all NASDAQ. So whether this current situation where we are paying attention to these older line, more industrial companies since January 1st, whether that stays or not, I don't know. You and I will talk about it over the year. But the point is that nobody has paid attention to them, and that's what makes it unique. Now we're at a point where if you only own technology stocks, because that's what has grown over the last 20 years, you are actually trailing a little bit. It might be something to take a look at your portfolio. Make sure you are diversified.
Fair enough. Now, let me ask you this. Since the Dow and S&P both, even if we just focus on the S&P because it's a more realistic indicator of how the companies are doing, they have gone up as we started this conversation. How much of that increase in the market relates to government funds? In other words, these stimulus bills. I mean, is it directly connected? I mean, would the market be where it is if there hadn't been this mass infusion of printed up dollars?
No, and that's part of it. And the market always wants to move on anticipation. So the reason the market has done nothing but go up since November 6th, which was the election, a lot of people were worried about, it goes one way, the market's going to fall apart. We do that every election, and it never really works that way.
I know.
The market is always anticipating what's coming. So what we're looking at, we're actually in a really strong economy right now. The U.S. economy grew by about 5% in the first quarter, and there are estimates that it could get to 10% in the second quarter. Wow. Those are ridiculous numbers, but we're still digging out of a hole, so it's not too surprising that that's the way it's growing. The market is anticipating that. That's why it's been up without this actual news. We haven't confirmed that it's gone up, and we're still in the second quarter. But it is anticipating that that's going to happen. That's why the stocks are up. So it's very possible we could have a strong economy and the market could wander around or even pull back a little bit because either we got what we thought we were going to get and we're not anticipating further, or because we didn't get all of what we were anticipating. So it remains to be seen what's coming there. But yeah, the stimulus is definitely a part of that. The market was anticipating that some government entity is going to throw a bunch of money into the economy because there's track record for that. And that money is going to get spent, finds its way into the pockets of publicly traded companies, as always.
As always, and that, of course, and you don't need to interject on this, and if you don't care to, Brian James, but that certainly could explain why a lot of these large companies are coming out with very leftist sort of adopting principles. In other words, favoring the Democrat Party versus Republican, because Republicans usually aren't a party of injecting printed dollars into the economy to try to save it. They're more, shall I say, Milton Friedman-esque in their economic view of life. How's that?
That's fair. I would say, though, that if you look at history, companies simply pull out the red playbook versus the blue playbook, depending on how the election goes. I think they're much more agnostic than we want to think.
Fair enough. And that actually gives me a dose of optimism. Brian, don't go away, because the housing market is hot. I mean, since we talked about inflation, isn't the expensive house of living an inflationary pressure question? We'll get Brian James' take on the housing market right after I mention Home Helpers. A21 right now, 55 KRC Talk Station. Coming up next, Bob McEwen, after this segment, served 6-term U.S. House representative, is going to be talking about how congressional wealth is created. How do they go up to Congress poor and come back with millions? Good question to ask. Brian James is our money expert. We're talking with him right now about Money Monday and the housing market. Now, housing is hot. I don't think anybody can argue that. Brian, you get a house on the market, it's there for a day maybe, real quick turnover. Inventory is down because demand is so high. Everybody's leaving the cities and buying out in the burbs or whatever the reason for it is, but the value, the price of homes has gone up. Bidding wars are all over the place. So it's more expensive to buy a home. Isn't that an inflationary pressure right there, Brian?
Oh, absolutely. That's a huge inflationary pressure because it's of course driving people to move. And one of the knock-on effects to that, think about this, Brian. Was it just the house that you bought, or did you buy a bunch of other stuff?
Everything is in short supply, and to that end, I had to replace the blower on our range. And you've got a motor up there that pulls the smoke or the whatever out of the room. That thing's going belly up on me. You know how long I'm going to have to wait to get a replacement for that because of back orders and supply interruptions? Over 2 months. Because everybody is remodeling. Everybody is getting things like that put in their house. They're remodeling their kitchens. They're putting money into them. They're investing. And we, of course, had supply interruptions based on COVID. So, boom, there you have it.
Yeah, exactly. And so these are all, you know, it's not all about a house is worth 20% more than it was a year or two ago. It's everything else you do when you buy a house. We're not going to bring our old garbage furniture from college to this one. I'm tired of staring at this couch. We got to go do that too, let alone all of the repair type work that needs to happen so that you can make it a nicer place. So, yeah, this has been one of the hottest years in about 14 years since we've seen this kind of growth in housing. And if you think back to when that was right before everything fell apart.
Right. Right. But that's what I was going to say. This is different because that was driven by subprime lending. You could be one day out of bankruptcy and get basically 100% of the home's value loaned to you. And that's just suspending the rules of reality for actuaries and people who manage and try to figure out risk or analyze risk. This is different. We're in put 20% downtime territory here, aren't we, Brian?
Yeah, this is far different. And just because the growth looks like it did in 2006 does not mean we're standing with our toes hanging over the edge of the cliff. It's never, ever, ever that simple. This is actually driven. We've got stricter underwriting guidelines for mortgages that have been in place since the world fell apart 15 years ago or 16 years ago. So it's driven by a couple of things. So that's demographics. Think about this. We've got millions of millennials who are now hitting grown-up age, and they're now at the point where they're starting families and buying homes, and apparently that has kicked into gear. So that wasn't a thing. For a long time, millennials weren't buying homes. Well, that has now kicked in. Millennials, as of 2019, now make up the largest portion of our overall population. They overtook the boomers there. They're about 20% of the population, so that's huge. All of them, many of us, have extra savings from the pandemic. That's kind of a lot of people have been sitting around saying, you know what, I'm stuck in this house, I'm tired of staring at these walls, or it's time to get out of this apartment, we've got extra cash for the down payment, let's just do it. So that has driven a lot of the demand.
It sure has. Any tea leaf reading, Brian, before we part company today about where this is going to go? Is it going to remain a strong demand? I mean, it seems to be that COVID-19 has really done more to defeat Agenda 21, which is trying to get everybody to move into dense population areas, than anything out there. People are fleeing densely populated areas. Is that going to be a trend that gets reversed once this COVID gets past us?
Well, you know, you never know. We still have a ways to go, but I would say that I don't see it changing because we're still in the middle of this recovery. We haven't quite finished the recovery, so that means people who maybe took a step backwards or two are starting to get back on their feet as we see hiring in the service industries, as hotels start to fill up again, and all of that. More money will be available. So I don't see any real change coming here in the short run.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you what, it's always a fascinating conversation. Brian James, look forward to next Monday for another edition of Money Monday. Between now and then, my friend, stay well.
All right. Be good, Brian. Thanks.
You too. 8:25 right now. We're going to hear from Bob. It is 8:30 right now. 55 KRC, the talk station. My name is Brian Thomas. Got tuned into the 55 KRC Morning Show, and I am pleased to welcome to the 55 KRC Morning Show. He's a man who's going to be doing one of the Empower Youth seminars. His name, and you know him, Bob McHugh, and of course served 6 terms U.S. House of Representatives for Ohio. While there, he was selected to the senior position as one of the only four Republicans on the House Rules Committee, manages the floor time for members in his jurisdiction over legislation, member of the House Select Committee on Intelligence, and U.S. delegate to the European Parliament for more than a decade. Also, I could go on with his CV, but we spent too much time talking about that and not enough time talking about how congressional wealth is created. Bob McEwen, welcome. It's great to have you on today. I hope you're well.
Oh, Brian, it's always my pleasure. Great to be with you. And yes, what we want to talk about at Empower You, which is a great organization because it brings people together to talk about things that you wouldn't discuss in normal conversation, but you're concerned about it. And what we want to focus on is how wealth is created in America. You listen to these politicians, and they know how to tax it, and they know how to destroy it, but they don't know how wealth is created. And that's one of the things that we want to talk about Tuesday night, tomorrow night.
Well, I was thinking along the lines of, how wealth is created. You mean for themselves? Because quite often, representatives poor, making only what the Congress or congressional salary pays kind of wealth people end up going there and they have assets of, maybe $750 or to $1 million themselves when you factor in their home ownership and everything. They come back as multimillionaires. And it always puzzles me. So maybe we should do a separate Empower You seminar on how congressional wealth is created as to the specific members of Congress themselves. But that's not the focus, is it, Bob? You're not talking about that.
Well, Bastiat, famous for writing the law, he said that one of the worst things that can happen to a good cause is not to be skillfully attacked, but to be ineptly defended. And I'm on the board of Turning Point with Charlie Kirk, and what we discover about college students is not that they're anti-capitalist or anti-free enterprise. They are ignorant about American free enterprise system. All they're taught is socialism, and they think that they believe in it, but they're blank sheets. And so what Empower You we're going to do is talk about why some nations are rich, why some people are rich, why some people are poor, what creates wealth.
Can't you point to corruption? I think of a nation like Venezuela was one of the wealthier nations, at least their oil reserves provided them with vast sums of capital when they were a free country. But as soon as the socialists took over, they nationalized the oil industry and then drove it into the toilet. Plus, price of oil fluctuates. That did have something to do with it. But the corrupt part is what brought the country down, putting friends and politicians in charge of companies over which they have no concept how to run. They never had any experience in it. That is the wealth defeating reality, at least in part, isn't it, Bob?
And there's a name for that. That's called socialism. That's when government control of the tools of production. Under free enterprise, if I don't make you satisfied, if I don't do something good for you, you don't voluntarily reach in your pocket and give me money. So under free enterprise, that's why America, 4% of the population of the world, more books, more plays, more symphonies, copyrights, more inventions than the other 96% combined, not because we're smarter than anybody else, but because we're freer. And that freedom, when you undo it, and we're going to make it such that you can listen to a politician for 2 minutes, and you'll be able to know whether or not he knows how to create wealth. The richest spot on the planet, when you and I were young, Brian, was a place called Detroit, Michigan.
Yeah.
And it's now the poorest city north of the Rio Grande. If you understand the principles we're going to talk about, you'll know how to make any rich place poor or make any poor place rich.
Well, we're talking to Bob McEwen. Of course, you know him, formerly representative for Ohio. He's going to be doing this seminar tomorrow night. It starts at 7 o'clock, as always. But you're going to be at the 20th Century Theater?
In Oakley. And it's going to be a great time. And the great thing about Empower You is that you're able to do it virtually at home in many cases. But on occasion, we like to get together and have a good time.
Right.
And that's for tomorrow night at the Oakley Theater on Madison Road.
I've been there many times to see a lot of bands over the years, Bob. It's going to be great having you there speaking about this important issue. People will be able to see each other and congregate. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for us to dwell together in unity. So either that or log on. Go to EmpowerYouOhio.org to get registered. Again, it kicks off at 7. You're going to be able to do a little Q&A for folks there, Bob?
At least half of it will be Q&A. Oh, absolutely.
Fantastic. That's really what makes an event. And I guess before we part company, Bob, isn't it true that these crises we have, the crisis of coronavirus, for example, or the New Deal or the Green New Deal, which purports to address this global we're all going to die crisis, that is, neither of those are wealth creating. They seem to be forcing us as consumers to do something and, manufacturers to do something that we otherwise might not do.
and massively destroying wealth.
Indeed.
The backbone is small business creates wealth. And what we're doing in the process is we're destroying small business. That's why you see the large corporations, their stock continue to rise, because every day these leftist governors shut down private enterprise. They're destroying the competition for the Amazons and the Walmarts down the road. And that is the backbone of America. And there's a term, you know, this is, all oligarchies are places like Russia, no longer communist, but is run by an oligarch of rich, powerful interests. That's what they have in Mexico. That's what America has avoided through free enterprise and small business being able to be formed. And that is the fight that is before us right now.
It's how we became the most powerful country in the world. In history, we did not get in the way of freedom and enterprise. Bob McEwen, it's going to be a great seminar tomorrow night. Get registered at poweruohio.org. It's also on my blog page, 55krc.com. Good luck with the seminar. Thanks for doing it, Bob.
Brian.
I'll look forward to talking with you again. Stay well. 836 right now, we're going to cure cancer. I know my friends at OHC at some day on this program are going to say, you know what? We've got a cure. One of those doctors may be Dr. Bertke, who's going to be on next. It is, in fact, I'm sorry, head and neck